So welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Scheltema, my co-host Felicity Sidnill-Reed, and our guest this week, Greg Kishkowski. Each week at this time, we visit with an author, an editor, or a publisher from our region, or one who has local connections. We hope to find out a little about their lives and what prompts them to write. We give them an opportunity to read from their work for us, and we're very pleased to have Greg Kishkowski with us today. Welcome, Greg. Greg Kishkowski was born in Poland and came to Canada with his family when he was 12. Settling here wasn't all that easy, but Greg graduated from high school, took a business diploma from George Brown College, and then studied philosophy and English at York, graduating from there with a teaching diploma in 2000. He has taught at an Ajax high school for nearly 20 years. 2 years ago, he took a 3-day workshop and since then has started writing. His first book, called Quintessential Quotables, was recently released, and he's planning a whole series. So, Greg, tell us a little bit more about how and why you came to Canada.
We came to Canada in January of 1985. My dad was a political prisoner. He was part of the Solidarity Movement. It was his job to listen to Radio Free Europe, which was a radio station in West Germany, and they would broadcast in Polish the news that was actually going on at the time, because the communist government did not report what was actually happening with the strikes and the Solidarity Movement. So he would go and he would transcribe the real news, and then he would hand out pamphlets. And so they arrested him, they tried him without evidence, they imprisoned him. He was in prison for about a year and a half. And then the strange thing happened was, once you've been in prison in a communist state, if you can imagine this, you have two options. You've either seen the light and become a communist, or the next time the Soviets would have to come in and try to explain to you what you're doing wrong. Yeah. My dad was never going to get a communist card and change his thinking. And so on a cold night, they went to all the embassies, and we ended up in Canada. He wanted to come to the States, but he just couldn't. The U.S. has a policy where you have to go for 2 years, and he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to leave us for that long period of time. So we arrived in the winter of 85 with 6 suitcases, not a word of English, no contacts, no money, nothing. Just Pearson Airport.
Yay, Canada.
Yes, yeah.
So you obviously don't think of your family's experience as typical of most immigrants, or do you?
I think it is typical. Lots of people face tragedy. But everyone immigrates for some reason. They're always leaving something for something better. So whether that is they're running away from alcohol abuse, poverty, whatever that is, it doesn't have to be a communist state. It could just be a different way of life, and not to have, or to have things that they don't have there, like freedom. And so I think in one sense, it is a common experience. Mm-hmm. The circumstances may be less and more like Hollywood, but at the end of the day, every immigrant faces and comes here for the same reasons, for a better life and peace, prosperity, freedom, happiness.
So having said what's the same about all immigrants, in what ways do you think your immigration to Canada was different?
Well, when we came here, we didn't come because we didn't like our country. We came because of what would have happened to my father had he stayed. I forgot to mention that there was a priest that was brutally beaten and murdered. I was the altar boy at his last mass in 1984. There's a movie Father Popiełuszko made. He's famous in Poland. So my parents didn't want to leave. They didn't want to leave the fight. So when we came here, we came here because we had to. We were extremely grateful that we were here, but we would have loved to stay home. And in 1989, when communism fell, my parents debated going back, except that by then I was almost finished high school and they didn't want to uproot me another time so that mm-hmm. I would go through another life change. And so we remained. So in that sense, I always had a sense of pride that my dad was a fighter, in a very, almost like Martin Luther King, in a nonviolent political setting for the right truth. And that has shaped me as a human being, and probably is hidden in my book somewhere.
Well, getting back to your book, you said taking that writing course, a 3-day writing course or workshop, changed your life. So what prompted you to take that workshop, and what happened after that?
It's funny looking back. There was nothing wrong with my life, like absolutely nothing. I mean, I'm happily married. I have 2 wonderful children. I have a great job teaching high school kids literature. But there was nothing missing. But at the same time, there was nothing terribly exciting that I would wake up every morning and want to do either. And my wife said that I really need to do something. And so this was the first time in my life where I booked time off work. I got a hotel room for 3 days. And I did nothing except for think about my life, where I am, where I'm going, what I want to do with myself. And I don't know how many people actually do that. They do the 9-to-5, Monday to Friday. They relax on the weekend. They get back to the grind. But I don't know how many people actually reflect on who they are, who they want to be, how to get where they want to be. And it changed my life. I mean, there would be...
So is that what the workshop was about?
No, the workshop was a business workshop. It was about success and being great. One of those motivational workshops. The writing came later when I started listening to audio tapes, and I was inspired by Seth Godin, the great marketer, great book writer, who basically said there is no writer's block, that there's either good writing or bad writing. So you wake up every day and you write. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to take him up on that, and I'm going to test him, see if he's wrong. And I've been writing for the last 2.5 years. I write about 500, 600 words every day without fail, and I post them online. There must be spelling mistake and grammatical mistake, but that's not why I write. I write because there is no writer's block.
So why did you decide to gather a collection of quotes and write about those rather than, say, a book about your really interesting past?
Interesting. I needed something to write about. And all the self-help books and all the business books and inspirational books, motivational things that I've read, I wanted to write something like that. Ultimately, I want to write fiction, but I'm not ready with the work commitments and family commitments I have to do that. So when I thought, what can I write about? And at the time, I was taking a quote and reflecting on it, and taking a quote and reflecting on it. And it came to me that that this could be a mini inspirational book. And so I decided, I don't know why, I decided to have a 5-year project and have 12 volumes with at least 365 entries. I didn't start small for sure. But I decided to make it big, but it's small. So there's a quote, there's a 500-word reflection, and a takeaway for the day. So the intent is you can have this book laying around like a bathroom reader, and you can just open up to anyone. So if you like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, or you like Malcolm X, or Martin Luther King, or you like a quote by anyone that's in there, you can just read it and think about it, and hopefully it sparks you to do what that weekend did for me, to think about where you are, what things mean, and where you're going to be going.
Well, perhaps you could give us a taste of what's in there.
I would love to. So this is a quote by Arthur Conan Doyle, who I loved. I loved Sherlock Holmes growing up. But he said the following: "It has long been an axiom of mine that the little things are infinitely most important." So here is a little passage. "We measure our lives by grand moments. We measure our time by eloquent press releases, spectacular front page stories, and best-selling memoirs. We love big houses, fast cars, hard bodies, fame, fortune, and everything that goes along with it. But what about the little things? What about being there for someone when it counts, or performing seemingly insignificant acts that might probably go unnoticed? What about doing them often and without counting the cost? What about doing the dishes every night, folding laundry, grocery shopping, playing dollies, stacking dominoes, or walking the dog twice a day? What about those quiet moments when you find yourself daydreaming while you sip on your freshly brewed cup of coffee? Shouldn't taking a moment to be still and quiet feel important? What about the countless other unassuming chores in your life? All those acts and thoughts and feelings that go unseen that are so often forgotten. Are you aware of those little moments? Do you honor and respect the dignity of those moments? Or are you forever hunting headlines and worrying if you measure up? Be careful what you measure yourself against, because you might just lose. It's easy to show up for the big moments. It seems a bit strange to say it, but you don't really have to do much on the big stage. The big moments are beyond our control, and we play such an insignificant role in them. But the little things, oh, the little things, they take great wisdom to be understood. It takes courage to see the little things as infinitely more important than the big things. It takes effort to see the brilliant, illuminating light of your life strung together in those quiet, unassuming moments of supposed insignificance.
You do a takeaway for each one? So what would be the takeaway for that one?
Little things are not little. Together, over time, they form a mighty chain, a chain you can anchor your life to.
Well, thank you, Greg. We've been speaking with Greg Kishkowski about his book, Quintessential Quotables, and we'll be back after this short break.